personality of God, and whose worship of transcendental songs becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 7, the son of Jona punished, text 15. Mata Shishunam Nidhanam Sutanam Nishamya Ghoram Paritapyamana Tadaridad Vashpa Kalakulakshi Tam Santayan Aha Kiritamali Mata Shishunam Nidhanam Sutanam Nishamya Ghoram Paritapyamana Tadaridad Vashpa Kalakulakshi Tang Santayana Hakiritamali. So I did what I said I was not going to do. So I'll just read the translation and we'll do the next verse responsibly. Translation for this verse. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing of the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in her great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus. So we'll go on to the next verse. We'll do that one responsibly. Tada! Shuchas te pramrajami bhadre yad brahma bandaho shira atatayanaha gandiva muktaya vishikaya upahare Tvakramya Yat Snasyasi Dagdaputra Tadashichaste Pramrajami Bhadre Yat Brahma Bandho Shira Atatayanaha Gandiva Muktar Vishikar Upahare Tvakramya yad snasyasi dagda putra Tadashuchaste pramrajami bhadre Yad brahma bandho shira atatayanaha Gandiva muktar vishikar upahare Tvakramya yad snasyasi dagda putra Tadashichaste pramrajami bhadre Yad brahma bandho shira atatayanaha Gandiva muktar vishikar upahare Tvakramya tyatsnasyasi dagda putra Please chant. Vaishnavis. So, synonyms, ta-da. At that time, only. At that time only, sorry. Shuchaha. Tears in grief. Te, your. Pramrinjami. Shall wipe away. Padre, O gentle lady. Yet, when? Brahma bandho. Of a degraded Brahmana, Shiraha, head, Atatayanaha, of the aggressor, Gandiva Moktai, shot by the bow named Gandiva, Pishikai, by the arrows, Upahare, shall present to you, Twa, yourself, Akramya, riding on it. Yet, which? Snasyasi, take your bath. Dagdhaputra, after burning the suns. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana, after beheading him with the arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then, after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. Please repeat. O gentle lady, when I present you with the head of that Brahmana, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then, after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. Srila Prabhupada's purport. An enemy who sets fire to the house, administers poison, attacks all of a sudden with deadly weapons, plunders wealth, or usurps agricultural fields, or entices one's wife is called an aggressor. Such an aggressor, though he be a Brahmana or a so-called son of a Brahmana, has to be punished in all circumstances. When Arjuna promised to behead the aggressor named Ashwatthama, he knew well that Ashwatthama was the son of a Brahmana, but because the so-called Brahmana acted like a butcher, he was taken as such, and there was no question of sin in killing such a Brahmana's son, who proved to be a villain. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschachadeshtarine Om Agyana Timurandasya Agyanandana Shalakaya Chakshara Unmulitam Nena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobijtang Shapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyahang Shri Guru Shri Tapadakamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Sayatam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Napta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye
Wancho Kopaturubi Shakri Pasan Nubi Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Prabhupada said on several occasions, those who know better and still do the wrong thing, they get punished even more than those who didn't know. Seems to be a Vedic standard. So in this case, Ashwatthama has done something that he knew was not right. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, describing the divine and demoniac natures, Yakshasya vidim utsusha vartate kamakarata nasasidim avapnoti na sukam na paramgatim. So he says there that those who discard scriptural injunctions and act whimsically, they don't get any siddhi, they don't get any perfection, they don't get any happiness, and they don't reach the ultimate destination. So in that purport, Prabhupada explains that this word kamakarata is very, very significant. He said those who know something should not be done and they do it anyway, they're said to be acting whimsically. And those who don't do something that should be done also are acting whimsically. Such persons are doomed or destined to be condemned by the Supreme Personality, Krishna. So in this case, Krishna is present. Ashwatthama has done something that he knows that he shouldn't do. He was raised by a practically perfect Brahmana, Jona Acharya. So he had no excuse. He knew that he should not have done this heinous act, but he did it anyway. So he's condemned by Krishna. Krishna told Arjuna, kill him. But it's pastime, so the pastime had to unfold. So Arjuna wanted to get Draupadi's opinion and Yudhishthira's opinion. So he arrested him and brought him back to the camp. And consensus was, on one side, Yudhishthira, Krishna, kill him. But on the other side, Draupadi was saying, no, he's son of a brahmana, he's our guru, and his mother is still living. She didn't commit sati because she has a son. So please don't let her grieve the way I'm grieving. So what to do? So we know the story will unfold what Arjuna does to solve the problem. But the point here is that Ashwatthama is doing something that he knows that he should not do. So we should try not to put ourselves in that position. Srila Prabhupada has come at great difficulty. With great difficulty he came to the West. And from the very beginning, practically, clearly pointed out what we should do, what we should not do. Which is the hallmark of somebody who's in the camp of the Devas. Those who are asuras, Krishna says, they don't know what to do or what not to do. They don't care. Pravritim cha, nivritim cha. Jana, navidur asura. This is one of the hallmarks or signs of an asura. Doesn't care. They don't know what to do and what not to do in each and every circumstance, and they don't care. They figure it doesn't matter. I just do whatever I want. And then when the repercussions come, negative repercussions, then they wonder, why is this happening to me? Why? I'm a good person. I give in charity. I like everybody. I say, hi, how are you? You know, they don't understand. They don't see the connection between things that they've done in the past and the reactions that are coming now. And this is true on a societal level also, not just on an individual level. When we don't have properly trained leaders, then they also make the same mistake. They whimsically do whatever they want to do or whatever they think they need to do based on the alliances that they've made and the favors that they owe. And they don't see the big picture. They don't see the long-term picture of the negative repercussions to themselves and the society. It is stated clearly in the scriptures that the leaders get 1/6 of the karma of the persons that they're leading. So that's a lot when you're in a country like the United States, 300 million plus people. You know, that's a lot of karma. And therefore we see that they rise quickly to this high position and almost as quickly they just get chopped down. It's all that accumulated karma sitting on their heads. Therefore, there's assassinations, or they die from weird illnesses, or just all kinds of heavy things happen to these people. Now, of course, everybody dies. It's not just the leaders that die. But when you die with that much karmic baggage, you're going to suffer for a long, 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 long. Every one of us without Krishna consciousness are piling up unlimited karmic reactions. But those who assume leadership positions and have to take on 1/6 of the karma of the millions of people that they lead, their karmic baggage is obviously multiplied by a lot. So it's not just that they die weird or they get assassinated or whatever, but their future is very, very bleak. And therefore, Imam Rajarshi Yovidu, this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is meant for primarily the Rajarshis, those who are take on the leadership position. They have to be trained in this Vedic culture. They have to be trained in the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. We've had many of our recent presidents in recent memory have accepted Bhagavad Gita, like Bill Clinton. I was there on the Santa Monica Promenade. We were doing Harinam one night, and he came through. This was after he had left office. And he came through with some security detail, you know, they have their bodyguards. And so one devotee, I forget who it was now, approached him with a Gita. Bhaktivatsal, right? Yeah, approached him with a Gita. And one of the security guys was going to stop him, but Clinton said, no, no, and he took it. And Obama has gotten the Bhagavad Gita. So many recent presidents have gotten Bhagavad Gita. As it is, have they read it? Can't say. It's not evident by the way they acted that they've actually read it. But at least just to touch the book, to accept the book, to think these Hare Krishna people are okay. Prabhupada said that. If somebody just thinks these Hare Krishna people are okay, they have a right to do what they're doing, they make spiritual progress just by that positive attitude. So, yes, who knows? What to speak of, I've told the story so many times. O.J. Simpson, I was with Brigapati in one Christmas marathon at LAX, and he came through with his children. And in the first pass, he didn't take the book. But on the way back, somewhere else, his son induced him to take the Bhagavad Gita. And he gave $5. And he said, I can't believe I'm giving these $5. Such a cheapskate. But by accepting that book and giving that $5, his future is bright. Without that, based on the accusations and things that he's done in his life, Adogachanti Tamasa, going down. But because of that one book, I'm convinced he's going to take at least birth of his human being again. So this is our responsibility. We have to learn the Shastra and teach it to others. That's one of the reasons why the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was formed, so that there can be systematic education in the knowledge of the Shastra, primarily Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and also systematic dissemination of that knowledge. Prabhupada said, if they invite us to speak, like at some college or whatever, they should pay some honorarium. However, if they want free knowledge, they can come to the temple. Every day we're holding classes. Anybody can come. Everybody's welcome. If they're a little sane, as long as they're not insane, they're welcome. Come and learn this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And above and beyond that, we're supposed to go out and reach out to people and try to get them interested, some or other, in taking these books and reading them. And the benefit will be unimaginable. Like I was, whenever I travel, I always ask the devotees how they come to Krishna consciousness. So there was a young man, thank God, he was willing to get up so early. My flight back from Budapest left at 6:30, so I had to leave the temple at 4 o'clock. So this young man had to get up real early. But he's a professional driver. That's what he does. He drives. He picks up people at hotels and whatnot. So he came 3:45. He was there waiting for me. So I'd never seen him before. So I asked him, how he came to Krishna consciousness. Young man, less than 30. So he said he was working for a company, and there was one older co-worker who kept talking about the Vedas and Vedic knowledge and principles and stuff like that. So he gradually got to know this person, and he asked him, well, where can I find out more about this? So the person sent him to the temple. This person happened to be an initiated devotee who left Krishna consciousness and went back out into the material world. But because he had such knowledge in him, he couldn't help but speak about it. And this is what happens when you get exposed to real spiritual knowledge. You just can't help it. You have to speak. Even if you're trying to run away from it yourself, still, it's so much higher than anything else that's out there that you can't help but spill it. The being, so to speak. You can't help but speak about Krishna consciousness. You just can't help it. So he was doing that. Even though he himself had stopped practicing, he was speaking about it. And this young man became attracted, started going to the temple. He's not yet initiated, but he and his wife are both devotees, and they're going to get initiated. They're aspiring for initiation from Shiva Ram Swami. So this is the power, the potency of this Vedic knowledge that we've been given. It is completely able to deliver anyone and everyone, because this knowledge, specifically of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, is not different from Krishna himself. Krishna is not different from his name, his fame, his pastimes, his entourage, anything connected to Krishna. And because Krishna is the supreme purifier, anything that comes in contact with Krishna becomes purified. Krishna can never be contaminated. Krishna's name cannot be contaminated. Krishna's nothing related to Krishna can be contaminated. Instead, anything that comes in contact with Krishna becomes purified. So this young man just tangentially comes in contact with Krishna consciousness by the agency of someone who had left Krishna consciousness, and he himself now is chanting, his wife is chanting, they have an 18-month-old child, and things are looking very bright for him just because of that little contact with somebody who pointed him in the right direction. So this fallen devotee is now his Vartma Pradarshika Guru, the one who pointed him in the right direction, even though he himself is not practicing properly at all. He gave up Krishna consciousness. He just went back out into the material world. Hopefully, and generally this is what happens, Krishna will reel him in. But for now, right now, he's apparently away from Krishna consciousness. So Ashwatthama did not have any excuse. He knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. He was raised properly by Dronacharya. He knew the codes of conduct. We assume that he knew the Manu Sangita, because these are the general codes of context for how human beings should live their lives. And although he was in proximity with Krishna, still he was not Krishna consciousness. He was not Krishna conscious. Krishna was right there. Through his father, Dronacharya, who taught the Pandavas, we assume that he had access, at least knew of Krishna, had some access to Krishna, still doing the wrong thing. Still doing the wrong thing. That means materially contaminated. Materially contaminated. He was so contaminated that he cut the heads of the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and presented them as a trophy to Duryodhana. And even Duryodhana, who was himself quite evil, tried so many ways to kill the Pandavas, specifically and especially Bhima, because he was so envious of Bhima. Tried so many ways to kill since childhood. It was going on, not just at the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra. When Bhimasena was a boy, Duryodhana went once while Bhima was sleeping, tied him up and threw him in the Ganges, threw him in the water, tried to drown him. But Bhima was so strong, even as a child, he was able to break free and come. So many ways he tried to kill them, poison and the house of lack, and you know the story. So Duryodhana was not a good guy. He was not a, you know. But even he was disgusted by this act of Ashwatthama, of cutting, beheading. So this beheading has been going on since time immemorial. It's not something new. It's still going on today. Recently in the news, there was a story that they captured two of these ISIL or ISIS fighters. I think the Turks captured them. And they expressed remorse at the beheadings that they participated in. They said, now we understand, we think we went too far. Especially one very high-profile case. They beheaded some British journalists or something like that. So this beheading is not something new. It's been going on since time immemorial. If it's sanctioned by the Lord, then it's okay. It's not something so bad. Because, as we know, everybody has to die anyway. So if you die being beheaded by Krishna or on Krishna's order, then that's actually good for you. But to do it whimsically, again, like Ashwatthama has done, this is the greatest sin, the greatest crime, and he will be punished for it. Yesterday at lunch, I was chatting with Mother Narayani, asked her if she knew that our god sister, Padyavali, I'm drawing a blank, old age, Padyavali had left her body. She said yes. And I remember her fondly because our path, some or other in the 90s, we kept seeing each other either here in America or in India. Now, talk about a gentle lady. Here in today's verse, it's mentioned Draupadi is a gentle lady. Padyavali was a very, very gentle person. Prabhupada said, you will recognize my followers, my disciples, by the fact that they're ladies and gentlemen. So she was a very ladylike person, very much Prabhupada person, Prabhupada Anuga. And so I said to Mother Narayani, yes, we're all lined up to go. And she said, yes, before we go, we should really all take deep shelter of the holy name. We should take shelter. And I said, I agree, because if we don't get into the mood of the spiritual world, the denizens of the spiritual world, then why do we want to go there? Why would we want to go there? If we happily remain materially contaminated, then why do we want to go to the spiritual world? It's incompatible. If we really want to go back to home, back to Godhead, then we have to develop this Godhead-like mentality before we leave. Before we leave here, we have to come to this platform of thinking, feeling, and willing like the residents of the spiritual world do. So the residents of Goloka Vrindavan, which we hope is our ultimate destination, they only know one thing. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Hey, that's it. They don't know anything else but Krishna. Does that mean they don't see anybody else? No. They interact with everybody else. They love everybody. The gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, every day they would go to see Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, knowing that they were in such deep pain of separation. So the residents of Vrindavan, they interact with each other, but Krishna is the central point. Without Krishna, there is no question. And even these Pandavas later on, when it becomes obvious that it's time to go back to home to Godhead, the entire, I've said this many times, this entire battle of Kurukshetra literally was fought over Draupadi's honor. They were willing to die to protect Draupadi's honor. But when it came time to go back to Godhead, they didn't even look back. They left the palace, they didn't even look back. The ladies just happened to see them going, Draupadi and Kunti, and then they also followed. So their attraction to Krishna was millions of times greater than their attraction to Draupadi and their mother Kunti, who they love. They love their mother Kunti. Whatever she said they should do, they did. And they loved their wife Draupadi, obviously, but their attraction for Krishna is greater. So we have to also gradually come to that point where our attraction for Krishna is reawakened, and there's no question of being attracted more to anybody else. Sometimes in the neophyte state, we see this. One devotee is attracted to another devotee, and together they leave. You see? They turn their back on Krishna for each other. So this is obviously ludicrous. We're here, we have come here to reawaken and strengthen our attraction for Krishna, which is natural, it's there. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunai. That love for Krishna is actually there in the heart. It's not something Prabhupada said it has to be imported from anywhere. It's there already. Shravanadi Shudachitta Karyayodai. By hearing, chanting, engaging in the practices of Krishna consciousness, and particularly putting ourselves at, sometimes even risk, but at least at this ease to spread Krishna consciousness, because, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness sometimes and requires some risk-taking, it requires some, at least we're not put in a comfortable position. The public will not allow you to be comfortable if you go out and preach Krishna consciousness regularly. They'll tell you what they think about you. So we have to put ourselves in those situations voluntarily for the pleasure of the spiritual master and Krishna. And then Krishna recognizes that, yes, this living entity is so serious, so determined to please me that he or she will put themselves in adverse situations for my pleasure. And Krishna takes that seriously. Otherwise, sometimes we may ask, why does God, you know, if he's actually God, he's the controller of everything, and why does he allow his pure devotees to have such difficulty? Why two heart attacks? Okay, so Prabhupada had a heart attack, but why let him have a second heart attack? You know, if he's in control and here's my pure devotee, why not just make the road smooth for him? Just like he made the Atlantic smooth so he didn't have another heart attack. But no, we see that pure devotees, they go through so many ups and downs, and just to show their determination that nothing, Prabhupada said, there's no material impediment to pure devotional service. In other words, if you're determined to serve Krishna, then nothing can stop you from doing it. Nothing can stop you. Not even the threats of the greatest demon that ever lived, Hiranyakashipu, in relation to Prahlad. So one of the places that I went to was the farm in Hungary, Krishna Valley, and they have a little Nrisinga temple, and they have two verses on the wall that they recite every day. One is from some Purana that I didn't memorize, but the other one, most of you know, Prahlad's praying to the Lord Nrisingadev, Yadi Yasyasite Kama. He said, oh, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to give you a benediction, I pray that within the core of my heart, there be no more material desire, the desire for material fruitive activity. So this is what we have to come to. We have to all come to this point of not wanting anything material anymore. No more desire for fruitive activity in this material world. Simply want to please the Lord under the direction and guidance of his pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. So I'll stop here. If maybe one or two questions, I want to save some time to show the pictures the devotees have been asking me. So, yes. Srimad Mahotsava Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Just wanted to ask for a little clarification on the principle of karma. I was talking to somebody at a book table last week, and he said, I don't believe in karma because, you know, why do bad people get away with so much, and why don't they stop? Like, where's the reaction for them, you know? And I was telling him that, you know, according to Lord Rishabhdev, the last two lines of his verses, Nasadi Manye Yata Atmano Yama Sanapi Klesha Deyasman Deha, that
Nunang Pramato Kurute Vidharma.
Yeah, that you're actually, you shouldn't have accepted a material body. This current karma is from your past life, and you're, what you do in this life is preparing for your next life. So, you know, we can see sometimes these presidents, maybe, just 1/6 of everybody's karma. And, you know, they leave office and they die. But, like, if it's 1/6 of everybody's karma, that's a huge amount, you know. So, but we don't see it because we don't know who they become in their next life. Maybe they become, I don't know, an animal in a slaughterhouse or something like that. I don't know. Anyway.
So what was the question?
Well, could you clarify that? A little bit, because sometimes it's
That's why we have to begin from the ABCs. If somebody doesn't understand and accept, or at least accept theoretically, the existence of the soul, then none of this makes any sense. You know, then they just see one life as all in all, and I just obviously have to do the best I can to enjoy in this lifetime, and then afterwards it's all over. So, first of all, you have to convince them, at least theoretically, of the existence of the soul. And if they accept that, then we can show that eternal means eternal. Never was there a time when that person did not exist, or will there be a time when they won't exist in the future. Even big religionists are confused about this. I think I mentioned in my last class that when I went to the Christian service for my mother, after she passed away in February, the minister specifically, I don't know because he saw me, Hare Krishna, he knows what we believe, but he specifically tried to establish that the resurrection is a resurrection of the body. You die, and then by Jesus' grace, your body will come out of the ground again and you will go back to God in that body. So even big spiritual leaders are totally confused. Now, my mother died at 87. I don't think she wants to go to God in that body. And if somebody dies after, you know, being born for 2 days, I don't think they want to go to God in that body either. So it's completely fallacious that you're going to, somewhere under that body that you died in is going to rise up out of the ground, and that's why they have to bury it. You can't burn it. But my mother wanted to be burned, even though she was a Christian. She had her body cremated. So they're confused. They don't know, you know, does what survives. There's no question of eternality if you're not already eternal. You can't become eternal. You see? Eternal means always existing, existing now, and it'll always exist in the future. That's what eternal means. Very clear. Any child can understand that. But so even big leaders, because they're at heart envious of God, even though they're preaching God, so-called God consciousness, they're actually envious. And therefore, they can't accept that. They can't see it. I told you the story. I stopped one guy in Penn Station, gave him Bhagavad Gita. Turned out he was a Christian minister. He said, yeah, I've read that book. I asked him, have you read it? Because he said he didn't want it. He said, I've read it. I said, well, what did you think? He said, I don't believe that book because it makes me responsible for what I do. Krishna made him say that because that's how they actually think. They don't want to be responsible for what they do. But hey, that's the norm. Even in regular society, whatever you do, you're responsible for it. What to speak of on the spiritual platform. So this is the problem. They don't want to be responsible for all the heinous things they've done in the past. They don't want to. Everybody, even those who say they believe in past lives, they want to believe that they were King James or, you know, or something, somebody wonderful. They don't want to believe that they were a butcher or a mass murderer, you know. But these things happen in everybody's lives. And when you fall into the material world, the three modes of nature are fighting for dominance. Sometimes you're on the platform of goodness, sometimes passion, sometimes ignorance. And in the mode of ignorance, you do all kinds of crazy, hellish things like we see people do every day. A woman went, you know, she had a YouTube account and she thought they were cheating her out of the money and they weren't allowing her to make money. So she went to their offices up, you know, further upstate California and shot 3 people and then killed herself. Crazy people, you know. Even if you think you're not making enough money on YouTube, go get another job, you know, do something else. No, so mad at YouTube for cheating her out of money in her estimation. She goes to their office, she shoots three people, then she kills herself. So these are the kind of crazy things that people do when they're in a mode of ignorance. They can't, you know, they don't know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Anyway, like I said, I wanted to save a few minutes just to show some pictures. So let's stop here. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai. So, first stop was Slovenia. Landed in Ljubljana. The airport is about 23 kilometers from the temple, so this is on the way to the temple. And as you see, there was snow on the ground. It had a pretty heavy winter there. These are the deities in the Ljubljana temple, Panchatattva, Kijai. So, arrived on the appearance day of she does find it. There he is. Here are the devotees celebrating. Because they have Panchatattva, they fast on the appearance of Sridhar's Pandit. Most temples they don't, but Prahlada and Swami was there. We traveled together, usual. Had a pretty nice feast, featuring pakoras. This is the front door entrance to the temple. And this is the entrance hallway. And we were getting ready to go out on Harinam. That's why you see the basket of cookies there. There's another view of the entrance hallway. So from the temple, we walked to the center of town through a big park. This is Ananta. He's the temple president. Very, very nice promontory. We're heading towards the center here. Very nice couple. She's a book distributor, and he's one of the main teachers of the Bhagavad Gita there. Bhakti Marco, incredible. He can play accordion for hours and lead the chanting for hours. I have a little kirtan of his at the end. And this is Bhakti David, big-time book distributor. Here we are crossing one of the bridges in the town center. Then we move to Pula in Croatia. There's a small center there. Another view of the center, just this white building in the middle. Is the center there. It's Prophet Murti. Small temple room, but nice. And they have an altar with just pictures, but whenever there is some kind of occasion, then they bring the deities. The deities are normally at some householder's home. Gorni Thai, beautiful Gorni Thai deities. There's we had a little evening program while we were there. This is the Rijeka Center. Small altar, small Gorni Thai deities. Deity of Lord Asingadeva. Interesting, Vyasasan, proper. And then we went to Zagreb. You can see, still snowing. This is the entrance to the temple. They have beautiful Neem Gorni Thai deities there. Beautiful. And Utsav Gorni Thai. Then we went to Hungary. This is the first day we arrived at the Hungarian farm. That's a temple on the left there. And they have Shishi Radha Shamasundar. Beautiful deities. Gaura Nataraj. No Nityananda, just Lord Chaitanya by himself. Gaura Nataraj. And Giri Govardhan Kijai. Big Govardhan Srila. This gives you an idea of the temple. It's, if not one of, it's the most colorful temples. And then they have this Nrisinga, separate little Nrisinga temple. There's Lord Nrisinga Dev, Lakshmi Nrisinga. Again, gives you an idea of how colorful that temple is. Srila Prabhupada. Then we went to the Goshala. This is the newest member of the Goshala. It's just a few months old. Then we went to the city temple, Budapest. Budapest, as they say. Chandramouli Maharaj was there, and we happened to arrive in time to have lunch. I was by myself at that point. Maharaj Prahladana Swami went to Serbia at that point. And they have Dayalni Tai Vijay Goranga. That's the name of their deities. Beautiful. Yeah, no. There's a restaurant here at the temple, and there are two others in the city. You'll see. So interesting, this property, this building on the left here, was a school for like 100 years, and then there's a bridge that connects it to a newer building. And the whole complex belonged to Samsung. And so the devotees bought it from Samsung, and now it's a, you know, temple, ashram, restaurant, everything there. Big Hare Krishna all over the front of the canvas. So here's their restaurant. They have beautiful furniture that they brought from India. Well, just everything there was first class. So I've always wondered, well, how is it the Hungarian nature is so successful? So I found out that in Hungary there's a law that when you pay taxes, you can designate 1% of your tax to go to any religious organization that you want. There's an approved list. So ISKCON is number 4 on that list. Of the list of approved religious organizations, they're number 4 on the list. So they get a significant amount of money from the government. So I'm just going to finish up by playing a little Harinam video for you. Obviously, there's a lot more, but you can see it on my Facebook page. So let's see. Saturday, they shut down the middle of the city and it becomes like a big shopping mall. So thousands of people come out even in the winter time. So I think accordion or a portable harmonium does add something to the Harinam. Gives it a real festive feel. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Thank you.
to the Spirit. And so quite a few couples that are British. Yeah, a lot of Persians now. I think one of them is running the restaurant himself.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Came back getting somebody to watch it. So, you know, people just can't help it. It's so great. So, thank you.